turn it down.
No, I know. Yeah. Oh my God, that was wild. Okay, so
nice solo.
Okay, all right, here we go. Sorry about that. Let's try take two. Hi, and welcome to Gen Extemporaneous. This is a podcast where I come up with an idea, I do some research, I grab a bottle of wine, I bring everything to Mark, and he pontificates. In June of 1999, James Oldham from NME commented about Baz Luhrmann's spoken word song, Everybody's Free to Wear Sunscreen. Unless you have been holidaying on Jupiter for the last 2 months, this remarkable and potentially nauseating record will have burrowed its way into your deep subconscious by now. Oldham went on to add, Luhrmann's postmodern masterpiece is half piss take, half soul-soothing brain massage, and all genius. A do-it-yourself pop landmark for the end of the self-help decade. Buy this record. 20 years from now, in ways you can't even begin to imagine today, you will be glad you did. Today, we have a special guest, Andrea, joining us to dissect the advice given in the song that Oldham was talking about, which tends to feed all kinds of bittersweet nostalgic feelings for those of us who are looking back at our youth and seeing our children and even grandchildren graduating. We are grateful that you come to listen to us each week, and if you like us, please share us with a friend. Hi, Mark Snedeker.
Hello, Christina LaRusso.
Say hi to Andrea. Andrea is back. She came and joined us on the Breakfast Club episode, and we had huge amounts of people listening to that.
Why are you telling me like I don't know?
I know, I know. Andrea, welcome back.
Thank you so much for having me. Hello, Christina and Mark.
We are so excited, and we're going to have you back again for our Halloween episode because we're going to do Feminist Halloween. Andrea's right. going to join us to talk about that. But we've been looking for the right thing to bring you on for, and we thought this was going to be it because the last one was, of course, talking about life lessons, and this one is talking about life lessons. And you did such a great job that time. So we're excited to have you. Okay, so I want to talk just a little bit about the history of this song, which, as I mentioned in the introduction, is by Baz Luhrmann. It was released in 1999, and it is called Everybody's Free to Wear Sunscreen.
Ladies and gentlemen of the class of 99, wear sunscreen. If I could offer you only one tip for the future, sunscreen would be it. The long-term benefits of sunscreen have been proved by scientists, whereas the rest of my advice has no basis more reliable than my own meandering experience.
It was taken from a column that was published in the Chicago Tribune on June 1st of 1997, and it was written by an author called Mary Schmick. And her column was called Advice Like Youth, Probably Just Wasted on the Young. And in the column's introduction, Schmick presents the essay as the commencement speech she would give if she were asked to give one. This was not ever a commencement speech. However, the essay soon became the subject of an urban legend which claimed it was an MIT commencement speech given by author Kurt Vonnegut. And that's how I heard about it. Did you guys hear about it that way?
I heard about it when you emailed it to me and said, hey, we were going to do an episode on this.
You've never listened? You never heard this song?
Nope.
Oh my God.
My son was 4 at the time. I was in, we were heavy rotation on Disney songs and Pokemon.
Okay.
Is all I knew about.
I don't remember the MIT reference or the Kurt Vonnegut reference. I think I just heard it on the radio or on MTV maybe with their video.
I don't know if there's a video. I'm certain that there must be, but I mean, it's Baz Luhrmann.
Girl, you know there's a video?
Okay.
Now, it wasn't an MTV video.
Oh.
It was a VH1 video.
Oh, okay. Oh, all right. Well, then.
As you know, VH1 was MTV for uncool people.
No, well, by that time, VH1 was MTV for people that were Gen X.
For our age.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. Exactly. Uncool people.
In 1999, I probably was watching VH1 as opposed to MTV.
100% I was. In the end, this was not a commencement speech given by Kurt Vonnegut, but he has gone on record and said he would have been proud had the words been his.
Honestly, when they asked me to do a commencement speech, and you know that's on the horizon, I'm sure, I'm just stealing this, and everyone is happy.
Okay, so Baz Luhrmann, as maybe we know, he's a director. He's done a number of things, most recently Elvis.
Yes.
He's got a very distinctive style. The song, it's spoken word, but there's like music sampling in the background. And it is "Everybody's Free to Feel Good" by Rosala. And I think that he used that in Romeo and Juliet. I've always loved this song. Today is we're just going to go through this episode and talk about the lyrics. Someone sent me the YouTube video and said, "Hey, do you guys remember this song?" Her name is Becky. And she said, do you guys remember this song?" And I'm like, "I do remember this song." And now that I've just come up with an idea for our next episode. We're going to talk about
the
advice.
Is she the one with the good hair?
Yeah, exactly. All right. So, Andrea, let me ask you first impressions of the song. How does it make you feel?
It definitely hits differently hearing it now. When you posed the question to me if I wanted to join you in this, I'm like, oh, let me go listen to it again. And it was almost painful, right, to hear some of these words. We're like, oh, God, why didn't I listen to all of this back in 83 when my parents were telling me when I graduated from high school, pretty much these same sentiments. Mm-hmm. In 1999, I probably rolled my eyes at it. I'm sure I did. Even though I was in my 30s by then, but it didn't hit me the same way this hits me now.
I have to say that when I heard it back in 99, I got it. I was like, there was something that made me kind of stop and go, wow, like these words are really profound. When I heard it, and it's probably because I'm such an old soul, everyone.
I'm sure that's it.
And then also paid no mind to it.
I was going
to
say.
Except for one lyric, and I'll tell you the one that.
Floss.
And I still, no, well, I do that automatically. Right. But
automatic.
No, that's 100% floss. Save your gums. But there's one line that really I held on to, and I use it often.
One thing I was thinking is that this feels very female focused, the words. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of talk about beauty and your hair, and not that men shouldn't or don't consider beauty in themselves, but it seems, and magazines, fashion magazines, like things in those days that would have been very female focused. So
I think of almost nothing else.
Of his hair and his own beauty.
Yeah.
Yes. It's heavy butt mark.
Magazines, don't look at fashion magazines because they'll just make you ugly. I think the one about using your body.
Enjoy your body. Use it every way you can. Don't be afraid of it or what other people think of it. It's the greatest instrument you'll ever own.
Not being afraid to use your body and not caring about what anybody else thinks of how you look when you're doing it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just being free to do what you want to do and to use it because it is the only and most valuable instrument that we have.
Why does that one resonate as much with you or so much with you?
Because I spent a lot of my youth feeling exactly that way, like being afraid to do things because of what other people were going to think. We have like dance, like mm-hmm. going to a dance and just being free to get out there on a dance floor and just, you know, let go and just dance or join a sports club of some sort or those sorts of things, some way that you have to be physical in front of someone else that would give them the opportunity to judge you. Even acting, I always wanted to be in a play and I never did that because, again, I didn't want to use myself in that way and put myself in front of others.
So I don't like to do anything I can't be good at right out of the box. So therefore, never learned to golf. Right? Because nobody is good at golf right out of the box. Yeah. Maybe Tiger Woods when he was a toddler. But, you know, for the most part, you have to suck for a decade before you're any good. Mm-hmm. But I didn't really have that fear of getting out there and playing sports, obviously, because I played, you know, a ton of sports. I mean, it's hard not to retcon things and make me into Superboy. But I wasn't really that afraid of like speaking in public or, you know, doing whatever. But I did shy away from some things that I maybe should have done. Like, for example, I did no plays. I don't know if it was because I was afraid or just didn't occur to me that it's something I might enjoy. And I wish I kind of had.
One thing that I didn't do that I look back on with a lot of regret is take part in sports. In particular,
swimming.
Except for swimming, but I wish I had done like soccer. I wish I had done, I tried softball, but I hurt myself the very first day of the...
Did you hit yourself in the head with a bat or something?
No, I went to slide and no one was teaching us how to slide.
Oh, yeah.
And
slide. You don't want to mess around with sliding if you don't know what you're doing.
And I hurt myself.
Yeah, of course.
And then I was just put off of it. But I was afraid, Andrea, to your point, to be seen to be awkward or to be to make a spectacle of myself in some way in my physical self. And sports was it. I was just like, oh, if I can't do it, I'm going to be embarrassed. So, Andrea, let me ask you this question, because I really feel like you're not wrong where there's this male-female divide. If I ask Mark this question, was there any body part that you were particularly self-conscious of? And ask Andrea the same thing.
Briefly.
Was there?
Yeah, because remember, the lobes.
Oh, your earlobes, that's right.
So I kept my hair long over my ears until...
Till 2004.
No, 83, but then I only allowed them to barely show the bottom of my earlobes, because I have like Fred Flintstone brontosaurus steak-sized earlobes. I mean, these are good, hunkin', meaty earlobes.
He's not wrong.
Yeah, I mean, these are, you know, I have detached lobes, and they're detached because they're just... too massive to hold onto the side of my head.
They flap in the wind.
They do. Like, but it wasn't something I thought about very often, but I was just, you know, I was just shy about doing it. But I wasn't really very self-conscious about stuff like that.
Body stuff. Okay, no. Andrea, how about you?
Where do we begin? Like, I was super sensitive to everything my whole life. So if someone made a comment about, like, oh my God, your feet are so small, then I would be embarrassed about my feet. I would never show them again. Then, oh God, I had a huge afro, so people would make fun of my hair all the time, so you don't want to go anywhere. And then because I'm so tiny, my proportions as I started to develop seemed like I was growing boobs faster than everybody else. So then I started to get teased about having big boobs. And I think I wore turtlenecks and baggy sweaters and, you know, high neck things for the rest of my life after that.
That's you right there. Well, Christina doesn't like either if you criticize something or if you compliment something.
Right.
Like, really, yeah, Christina would prefer you just never discuss her.
Exactly.
Is that accurate?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty true. And honestly, that carries over into today. For women, it is always, always about body. And so it's great that you brought this one up right off the bat, because I think it's one of the richest pieces of advice in the entire song. Not even if ourselves, it's the world is always looking at the female body, and the female body is a constant battleground. The right to choose is, you know, that's a great example of how the woman's body is a battleground. So it's like this focal point. It's no wonder that women are constantly thinking about, you know, what are people thinking about my body, and what, you know, what's going on with my body, and how is my body changing? And that happens to us throughout our lives. For me, it is true. I don't like to be singled out, which is counterintuitive to some of the things that I do. Like, I like to be in plays. I like to do this podcast. I like to go on Twitter Spaces and talk on Twitter Spaces. It kills me to be singled out, though. If, like, Mark will post something and say, hey, we got a good compliment, and here's what someone said about Christina, I will literally text him and say, take it down. I don't want any attention called to myself.
And then I remind her who's in charge of marketing
but it's
to stay in her lane.
But that's not my body per se, right? So that's me, that's my person, but it's not my body. What I was extraordinarily sensitive about, and I can remember this, were my ankles. And this is just the weirdest thing. Andrea, you'll get this, all right? So what I noticed is that all of the girls in school had kind of thicker ankles, and they looked really cute with ankle socks. And I wanted to be a cheerleader when I was in middle school. And I went to try out for cheerleading, and I made it through the first cut and the second cut.
And it was the ankle test.
But I was so self-conscious about how my ankles would look, because my ankles were and are still very slender. I have thin ankles and wrists.
By the way, that's generally what people want.
And I refused to go to the final tryout for
you
cheerleading.
Are so weird.
Isn't it weird? Okay. And my mother at the time said to me, you don't understand now, but someday you hopefully will, that those legs are fantastic.
Yes.
And your ankles look great. And I'm like, I don't know. And I just felt gangly because I was tall and I had these long legs. And
yeah. Oh my God. That's how horrific for you.
Okay. I didn't understand then because I was in middle school.
And I was exactly the opposite. I was teeny tiny. And while the other girls were shopping in the juniors department to go to, you know, the dance, I'm still shopping in the little kids' clothes. I couldn't wear all the cool jewelry because none of it fit me. I would get bracelets and put them on and they would fall right off my hand. Totally understand.
Let's carry on. And Mark, why don't you say one of the lyrics that resonates most with you?
I think the best advice, though, is kind of that.
Sometimes you're ahead. Sometimes you're behind. The race is long. And in the end, it's only with yourself. Remember compliments you receive. Forget the insults.
Don't be consumed by what other people think, mm-hmm. right? Live your life in the way that seems best to you. Now, you might be wrong, right? That might be a terrible life. You might be, you know, the way I wanted to live my life was to burn down buildings. Okay, not a great life path to follow. But really, you need to find something that works for you and not worry so much about whether it works for everybody else. And I think that's good advice, so.
Why does it only hit you that that's good advice when you're, you know, our age?
Yeah, because, well, there's not as much pressure, right, socially. First of all, I've narrowed my group of associates considerably, right? I'm not in that mass of humanity anymore. So I can pick who I hang out with. I think that's part of it. But just that realization that, you know what, I've kind of figured out by now who I am. I have a better idea of how I come off to other people, although not perfect because I'm not super self-aware about stuff like that, mm-hmm. but I just wasn't aware of how other people viewed me.
Andrea, you said something that kind of struck me, which is, why did it take us so long to get to the point where we are now, where we realize like people's opinion of us don't really matter, right?
Right.
Well, I want to challenge you on that because you and I became acquainted because of an online fandom. And we're not going to go into detail on that. What I have seen is that there are a lot of people who are our age who within that fandom are very concerned with how they're perceived by others. And in fact, people use it as a weapon. I've had people say to me, trying to make me crumble, they'll say to me, well, nobody really likes you.
Yeah.
And the answer is okay. That's okay. Or people will say, you know, you don't have any real friends. On the other side of that, I have seen people who've come to me and said, I don't like the way I'm feeling because I feel like I'm not liked. I don't, you know, I think people don't like me. I don't have friends in this fandom.
The whole process of this fandom made everybody revert back to how we felt and how we acted when we were in high school. Some people did it because it was the fun part. We wanted to reminisce about the fun part. Other people got into the fun part and then never left. And so then it became its own sort of growth off of the fandom, where there's a certain set of people that went back there and never got back out again. So all of those feelings and all of those, the insecurities they may have had when they were 14 or 15, they don't have now. So now maybe they used to get bullied. Now they get to be the bully. Maybe they weren't the, you know, boss of the school. Now they get to be the boss of the school because they, at an older age, you feel a little more secure with who you are and you have your voice a little bit better. And some people are always in the shadows and they'll continue to be in the shadows. So yeah, a lot of it made a lot of people revert back to some immature feelings and behaviors and not leave them because they were getting attention because of it.
Mark said something that made me think he has narrowed the scope of his friend group at this point, right? He's winnowed that out.
I say that I have done it actively as opposed to they all abandoned me.
but what I was wondering when he said that and made me think of the fandom is that I wonder how much it had to do with opening up ourselves to a much larger group of people. And, you know, you want to be liked, but also at what cost? You know, I don't want to be liked, but only if I say and do everything that someone tells me to say and do. Maybe when that happened and everybody kind of came into contact that way, it just felt like literally you're in this big high school again where there are several hundred people who, you know, everybody kind of knows everybody. And then there's a lot of eyes on you again.
Right. And you're not judged on your looks or what you wear or where you live. You're only judged on your social media content.
I've seen a lot of people get judged on their looks.
Yeah. That is true.
In that fandom.
There is
a lot of body shaming. Now, less, obviously, than in high school where, you know, you had to show up every day and you had to worry about what you were wearing. You do get to curate that experience a little bit more.
You're right. It's not the first thing that you meet someone with. If you meet someone with your online presence, whatever that may be, a little tiny dog picture.
And whatever content you put out, I think you open yourself up to much more scrutiny. If there's more people scrutinizing you, obviously, unless you are 100% solid in who you are, that could be jarring.
I think the big impression that the lyrics made on me was really twofold. One is a lot of the stuff you thought was important, that's the stuff you shouldn't be sweating, right? Mm-hmm. Did you have the cool clothes? You know, did everybody like you? Not just the people that you like, did everybody like you? You know, were you the right weight or whatever it was? But some of the things you thought were less important, they're now saying, this is important. Wear sunscreen, floss, take care of your knees, experience life, things like that. You weren't focused because you were in the immediate and worrying about what other people thought. And that's, I think, the kind of the real theme of this originally essay, but now song.
Here's the one that I really love this lyric. And I've used this lyric ever since I heard this in 99. I refer to this a lot.
Don't feel guilty if you don't know what you want to do with your life. The most interesting people I know didn't know at 22 what they wanted to do with their lives. Some of the most interesting 40-year-olds I know still don't.
I love that, and I think that it's true. I'm not saying become paralyzed and do nothing between 22 and 50, but don't get too hung up on this is where I must be, unless, you know, you really want to and go on that journey. But it's really, you know, I hate this is trite, but it's really more about the journey than the destination. And I am here to say that some of the most interesting people I know are people who later in life changed jobs or did something really radical, went back to school. I knew a guy when I was in grad school who he had a private law practice and he was a very successful attorney, and he quit and went to grad school to get a PhD in history. Fascinating, fascinating guy.
Who would do that?
Michael. His name is Michael. Right, well, and he's somebody I admire a lot.
And every therapist that I ever went to as a kid always told my parents that your daughter marches to the beat of her own drummer. Don't expect much from her. She's going to do what she wants to do. She'll get there when she gets there. And yeah, I didn't go to college until I was in my 30s. So I totally believe it. When I did go to school right after high school, because that's what everybody did and that's what I was supposed to do, but I hated it. And that was when I had the opportunity to have my school paid for, but I had to mess that up. I came home and I worked like 3 or 4 jobs and figured out what it was like to live in my own apartment with roommates. And I worked my way up in a food service company and then decided I wanted to get, you know, a culinary degree. And that was in my late 20s. And then I did that for a little while. And then when I was in my mid 30s, I decided I wanted a bachelor's and then a master's.
So like you, Andrea, I didn't actually do school until I was 26. And then I went from school right to graduate school. So by the time I got out of graduate school, I was 34.
She was 27.
No, I was 34. And that's when I was having my son. And so probably, of course, that's why I really like that lyric, because it validates my life experience. But but when I heard that, and honestly, when I heard that, I was 29. So I was in school, and I remember feeling that when I was an undergrad, I felt very acutely that I was older than everyone. I love that lyric. And there are people, my kids now, and, you know, a lot of people will say to when you meet a young kid, well, what do you want to do? You're going to be going to college. What is it that you want to study? And I too ask that question, but a lot of times they'll say, I don't really know. And I'll be like, good, go and just have the experience and let yourself explore and find what you really love. Because honestly, you're doing stuff that you don't love, it's just a long slag, isn't it?
But I am a strong believer. I agree with you, though. It was different maybe when it came to my son because, you know, I don't want to have to support him until he's 50. You really should, you know, that kind of the idea of a liberal arts education is kind of fallen out of favor because they're like, well, what are you going to do with it? Well, you're going to be a cooler person. Or you might be a cooler person, right? If that suits you. So I do like to see, you know, people follow some portion of their passion. It doesn't have to be how they make a living and take some chances, right? I mean, I think that's another big theme of this essay, rather, is, you know, take some chances, right? Try new things, expand your horizons, push the outside of the envelope a little bit, you know, stretch some of the things. And I think that's something I did not do a great job at. Because I was like, okay, get a job. This is a good, safe job. I'm in commercial real estate. You know, I didn't really do, like they say, live in New York, but not until, you know, not so long that you become hardened, right? I always wanted to live in a city and I never did. Mm-hmm. And I don't really know why. I mean, I don't have a good reason for it, I don't think.
Let's go back to what you were talking about before about doing different things.
Right. Trying new things, adventure, whatever.
So, Andrea, you feel like you did that.
I didn't do everything that I wanted to do, but... yeah, I got my drum set out and yeah, I marched to my own drummer.
So Mark didn't ever live in a city. What was one thing that you would have liked to have done that you didn't do?
Live on the West Coast and still am petrified to get on an airplane. So that restricts me from seeing anything more than my East Coast, you know, experience. And I would have loved to have lived in California. I still dream about California. It's this crazy place in my dreams with like all these hills and I'm like petrified to go anywhere, but I still dream about being there.
So you would never take a road trip out there? That seems like the ideal road trip to take.
The opportunity hasn't presented itself.
You gotta create it, Andrea.
That's right. Well, yeah. All right. So one of the lyrics says,
do one thing every day that scares you.
Andrea, maybe this is it. Maybe getting on a road trip and going out to California is something that would scare you, but God damn it, do it, girl.
That's a lot of time off from work and away from the family, and it requires a lot of planning, and I'm way too old and curmudgeon-y now, but well, I don't know.
Those were excellent excuses.
Well, I like this excuse. Well done.
So I definitely do that every day.
Something that scares
you?
Oh,
yeah. I like wake up, I'm like, huh, wonder how much money I have. Wow, that's terrifying.
Do you like to do things that
scare me?
Scare you? Or, you know, I mean, I don't think I don't think that she means or.
Right, not sheer abject terror.
Right, something that really frightens
you. Like sometimes
you.
I'll close my eyes when I'm driving to work, that kind of thing.
No, my God. You fool. No.
Well, I mean, we both did something new, right?
Yeah.
When we started the podcast.
Yeah.
You know, but you know that I was not going to be starting that podcast on my own.
This is a boundary breaker for me. The effort that it took to reach out to you in a DM to just be like, hey, you know, I don't know who you are, but I like what you have to say and I want to talk to you a little bit. That was a stretch for my boundaries too. So I would say maybe every month or so I try to stretch them, but I wouldn't say every day. That's a lot to ask.
That seems a little, honestly, that seems like a little extreme.
It seems like a thing for young people, right? Yeah. I think as we get older.
I think like if you could say like every month do something that
pushes boundaries,
that's probably good enough.
Yeah. And I am at a stage now where I've done a lot of boundary pushing and I want more. And that could be either a very extremely creative and fun moment in my life or a sign that something's about to go tits up because usually when I get that way, I'm not at peace with myself. Right. So then it's all about how do I find that peace? And sometimes I find that peace by pushing the envelope and doing something interesting and new.
Well, the one that was the gut punch was don't worry about the future.
Don't worry about the future, or worry, but know that worrying is as effective as trying to solve an algebra equation by chewing bubble gum. The real troubles in your life are apt to be things that never crossed your worried mind, the kind that blindsides you at 4 p.m. on some idle Tuesday.
Which I think was like the day I got the phone call when my dad was killed in a car accident. That's just what comes to mind. It could be anything, but...
It absolutely... 100% true and terrifying when it, because you can't plan for it, right? There's no planning. There's no being prepared for it. You just have to, it happens and you roll through it. And I think that, so mine, you said when your dad, when you found out about your dad dying, mine was when we discovered that Stu had brain cancer. Never in a million years would I have expected it to be that. Never, never. Not even with Google MD.
Yeah. It just, those kinds of just gut blows, you know, that just change everything in your whole life. You can't prepare for that really in any way. And you just have to try to find a way to deal with it. And that's why I think that the lines about cherishing what you can. Now, obviously, they have to be, you know, parents that, you know, are worth cherishing. Not all of them are. And same with your siblings.
Get to know your parents. You never know when they'll be gone for good. Be nice to your siblings. They're your best link to your past and the people most likely to stick with you in the future.
You know, given the chance, I would love to go back and spend more time with my parents and go on a trip with them or just something like that, you know, where you just assume they're going to be there forever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, I hate every single one of my siblings. They're awful,
siblings.
Awful people. And I just live to troll their Facebooks. That's all I care
Except
about.
Tom, where's our theme song for Vampire Insider?
He is just, he feels like that if he's not getting paid, he's not really responsible to crank out free music for me. So he and I are going to have a reckoning.
I'd like to segue to the focus on staying close to the people who hold the keys to your past.
Understand that friends come and go, but with a precious few, you should hold on. Work hard to bridge the gaps in geography and lifestyle, because the older you get, the more you need the people you knew when you were young.
I think about that now. Like, I have, you know, my brother and my one best friend from when I was, like, literally 6 years old, who was basically my sister, who has all of my memories, you know, the same memories that I have, and how important that is to have at least one person in your life that you can go back in that, on that trip with, to sort of talk about the things that happened when you were young. And I didn't ever think that was going to be important. My brother is friends with everybody he went to kindergarten with still. And I have one friend, you know, one friend that I've held on to that I have continued to stay in touch with all of this time. So I just think it's interesting.
Strangely, my siblings do not share the same memories as me. They're constantly telling me, like, Mark, that totally didn't happen. I'm like, are you sure? I feel like I did all those cool things. They're like, nope, that was a TV show you saw. I'm like, well, whatever. Why don't pee in my cornflakes. I mean, you know, let me believe what I believe.
Well, it's interesting because as you get older, you really are the keeper of your own history, unless you do have someone like this.
Yeah.
Andrea, I'm thinking about how you're saying she shares your memories. She has your, you know, she has your memories. And I have a friend that I could reach out to who has that, but she's somebody that I could reach out to, or her family I could reach out to, that would be able to give me that touchstone. But I'm not very nostalgic for my own past. I wonder if it's because, for me, you know, I don't know, maybe there's not much to really look back on with.
And you really shouldn't feel required to, right? Mm-mm. You should, if you can look back on things that you think are either enriching or enjoyable, mm-hmm. great. But if you look back on them and they're painful or difficult or whatever, and you don't want to, don't.
No, right. And, yeah. And I don't even have a conscious feeling of it being painful. It's more of a feeling of, and this is unusual because I am a historian. So I'm nostalgic for the way past. I have historical nostalgia, or I'm future focused. I'm like, I don't really care about what happened 10 years ago. Let's go forward. Yeah. What's going on now?
What's for lunch?
I have, well, that's a very important, that's a very important subject. So yes, there's a lot. Mark and I, on several episodes, Andrea, have touched on the concept of nostalgia, and it's a theme that's kind of playing out through this 2022 season.
It better, because that's mainly what has people listening to our podcast.
Well, right, which is sort of the leaning into the Gen X thing. And this song made me nostalgic when I heard it. So at once, it's funny because it is looking back. It is somebody who has had a lifetime of experience who's looking back and saying, learn from my mistakes. Obviously, you're never going to listen to me, but here's what you should do. So nostalgia is being presented to people who they aren't really nostalgic yet for anything because they've just graduated from high school or graduated from college. What they say about nostalgia in the song, I thought, is really interesting. Two things.
Accept certain inalienable truths. Prices will rise. Politicians will philander. You too will get old. And when you do, you'll fantasize that when you were young, prices were reasonable, politicians were noble, and children respected their elders.
I do whenever I'm in debates or something with someone, and they're always like, you know, remember back in the day. I'm like, yeah, look, I get it. I loved the 80s, right? There are a lot of things in the 80s that I love about. And I've mentioned this to Christina as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you kind of filter out some of the stuff. Like, there was smoking everywhere. You're in a restaurant. I remember flying on airplanes that still had smoking.
Rampant misogyny. Yeah, rampant homophobia.
Homophobia. I mean, when we watch these movies and we do life lessons from 80s movies, a lot of times it's shocking, right? And
right.
You see those things and you see somebody use pejorative for a gay person, or you hear them use a racial slur, and it really shocks you. And guess what? That stuff was way more permissible back then.
Well, now that Mark made it sound horrible.
No, but talk about positive nostalgia, because there is positive nostalgia. Lots, right?
Yeah, but now I don't feel good about it.
But you can't. But I think that's also an important lesson. It's okay to feel good about that stuff, right?
Sure.
You recognize that, you know, there were definitely problems. And guess what? In 20 more years, people will look back and go, oh my God, you know, what was wrong with you people? But there will still be good things about it. And you're entitled to remember and enjoy the good things, mm-hmm. right? That's totally okay.
Oh, and then the other part that I wanted to talk about that kind of touches on nostalgia is this.
Be careful whose advice you buy, but be patient with those who supply it. Advice is a form of nostalgia. Dispensing it is a way of fishing the past from the disposal, wiping it off, painting over the ugly parts, and recycling it for more than it's worth.
Back in my day.
Well, right. That goes to exactly what you were talking about. Andrea, even though you were saying, well, now I don't feel good about, you know, sort of the positive nostalgia that you might have been feeling, or the positive way that you were spoken about nostalgia, it's still, you have to be gentle with yourself.
Well, I read that line several times. I'm like, it didn't resonate with me until you just read it now and in context with what Mark just said a few minutes ago. So
I'm really good at making people feel bad about stuff. So,
well, no, I don't feel bad about it. I mean, I was teasing. I don't feel bad. Believe me, there were terrible things happened to me back then too. Christina, just like you, you know, a latchkey kid. My parents got divorced, so I can't tell you the number of nights I'd wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and there was nobody home because my dad was out, and you know, that none of that stuff was good. So, but you have to get to a point in your backward view, in your rear view mirror, where you let go of the ugly, because there's so much of it now. Like, how much ugly do you want to see in the world? So I'm going to paint over all that stuff that happened back there and pretend like it was really great all the time, because I have to deal with things that aren't really changing. So I can tell stories to the youngsters about how great it was back then and how they could do better, you know?
Yeah.
So here's one I wanted to ask you guys about.
Okay.
Because this one I think is a little maybe controversial. Okay. Maybe not, but we'll see.
Ooh.
Enjoy the power and beauty of your youth. Oh, never mind. You will not understand the power and beauty of your youth until they've faded. But trust me, in 20 years, you look back at photos of yourself and recall in a way you can't grasp now how much possibility lay before you and how fabulous you really looked. You are not as fat as you imagine.
Is it important to do that?
Is it important to enjoy the power and beauty of your youth?
Yeah. Or is that maybe pushing us to be superficial and...
I think that it's pushing the impossible, because I think that part of the human journey is to grapple with your youth, to learn. That's the time where you're learning all of the things that are going to make you eventually as good as you can get, right?
Yeah.
So I don't I think that some of that grappling with, like, in, you might say, well, I'm too fat, or I'm this, or I'm that. I think that's just part of being human. I don't know if you can take that away from anyone, because, and here's why, everybody, well, I can't say everybody, they're always going to be outliers. Somebody's going to raise their hand or DM us and say, not me. But I think that everybody at some point feels either overweight or underweight or uncomfortable with the way that their body looks and feels to them. And it doesn't really, what the truth is doesn't matter there. So I don't think that you can really enjoy the truth. You can only enjoy your self-perception.
Well, and plus I feel like when you're young, like shit is always just rushing past you at high speed, right? Like you're hurtling through school, into college, into a job, and not until you get a little older you're like, and you slow down life a little bit and you look back and you're like, huh, okay, yeah, I really should have done this or that. But when you're in the moment, and I think that's what the essay says, right? It's never mind, you're never going to understand it. Mm-hmm. I had a very bare amount of that, I think, and it reminds me of a line from Chariots of Fire. Mm-hmm. Did you watch that movie?
Yes.
Back in the day?
Andrea, did you see Chariots of Fire?
I did, but I would never recognize anything but the song.
Yeah, it's a great song. All right, so Eric Liddell, the Christian Scottish runner, right, who wouldn't run on the Sabbath and all that, and he's trying to explain to his missionary family why he runs.
Jenny, I believe God made me for a purpose. But he also made me fast. And when I run, I feel his pleasure.
And when I run, I feel his pleasure. And that's someone who is just exultant and enjoying their youth and their strength and their speed. Now, when I was young, was I the tallest guy on the team? I was not, but I was fast. And sometimes I would just run in a game because I liked the feel of running. Whatever, we're going off the sidelines to eat our orange slices or whatever it is, right? And I would sprint off. Now, part of it was also showing off, which I know shocks you, right? But I loved that feeling of being fast, right?
Andrea, was there anything that you felt, we talked about what we were uncomfortable with body-wise. Is there anything non-body or whatever-wise that you felt particularly,
this is my thing.
This is my thing. This is what I feel great about doing.
I was the second child, the youngest child. So you think I would have gotten everything that I wanted, but it was like, I was 8 when my parents got divorced. And my brother moved with my dad, so it was just me and my mom. My mom was super frugal and super, like, hands-off. I did a lot of stuff. Like, I was in ballet. I loved ballet until it came time to, like, need shoes and tutus and those sorts of things, and I wasn't allowed to do ballet anymore. Then I made the cheerleading squad until I needed the shoes and the uniform and ride somewhere. Then I wasn't allowed to do that anymore. Then I left roller skating, so I went roller skating a lot. Now, I think I saved my own money to get, like, a little dress and go take lessons, but I didn't have a car, and my mother was just too busy to drive me anywhere. So I got to a certain point in my life where I just stopped trying things because I was never able to bring any of them into fruition enough to make them a passion. Does that make sense? And I really think that's probably part of why I didn't enjoy college the first time that I went, because I never really had to, like, work through anything and, you know, kind of excel at it, because I was never allowed to stay in anything long enough to figure it out. So I didn't learn that hard work part.
Because you didn't know what you were good at. And what about later?
Yeah, that was cooking. Then I realized that, you know, I'm really good at, like, I had an eye for design, so when it came to, like, setting up catering functions, I could really make a beautiful room. I can look at a recipe and pretty much put it together. I never wanted to work in the kitchen, though, because, I mean, obviously back in the 80s, it was very male-dominated and very difficult for a 5'2", you know, blonde-haired woman to do anything back there. But the front of the house was a place that I enjoyed a lot. And doing catering and weddings and those sorts of things was something that I excelled at and did very well.
And I think that if you can lean into stuff like that, like you've discovered that, if you can lean into that for at least some period of time, mm-hmm. that's really going to give you the kind of joy that years later you can, you know, whether you stuck with it or not is not as important as you can look back right. on that years later and say, yeah, that was a joyful thing, right? That brought me happiness and I was good at it and I loved being good at it.
Yep. And I do look back at those times with, you know, with pride and a sense of accomplishment, but you know, that's a career that literally sucks the life out of you. Your time in it is pretty limited unless you're the company owner and you have people that work for you. So
I want to talk about one that I disagree with. And
yes,
this will be our last
negativity
group conversation. And let's see if you guys agree with me about this. Keep your old love letters, throw away your old bank statements.
All right.
So lay it on us. I disagree with that. I think throw away your old bank statements. God, get rid of the clutter. And I am somebody that has to really, especially with my records and stuff like that, I have to be strict with myself to actually cull them. But keep your old love letters.
Well, it depends a little bit on whose love letters you're keeping, right?
Well,
like
that's
if you
true.
Had love letters from high school now, that's not weird. If you have love letters from 2.5 years ago, then we might have a little problem, right?
But what? Do you understand? I mean, I think that's obviously it's metaphorical. I think, or it could be.
Yeah.
But
so do you think that's just too much living in the past?
I think, yeah. But Andrea, literally, what do you think? Keep your old love letters and throw away your old bank statements.
I think about who's going to have to clean up all that shit after you die. Like I had to do with my mom, who saved all of the cards that she got when she married my dad.
Oh my God.
So, yeah. I mean, they were really cool to look at because they were all from the 60s. Late 50s, early 60s.
Oh, neat.
But I sold the money bank, by the way.
Did you really? Oh, my God.
Yeah. People love that. Yeah. I can't relate because they don't have any love letters. I know. And that's not terrible. A boy wrote me a poem once and I punched him in the face, never talked to him
good.
Again.
Oh, God. Fuck poets.
Why is he forcing poetry on you? Yeah. I'd feel attacked too.
Yeah.
It's a fair response.
Yeah. Roses are red and so's your nose, bitch. Bam.
When I was at work, I kept like a glory file, you know, so if a bride's mom sent me a really nice note about what a good job we did mm-hmm. or, you know, just a compliment in some ways. Those I want to save and I want to read. People wrote me letters after my dad died telling me all about what a wonderful guy he was. Those things I wanted to keep. I'm not keeping his old, you know, bank statements and pictures of his ex-wife or anything. So
right.
I don't know. Well, I'm also a proponent of if you really want to keep something and treasure it, it shouldn't be in a box under your bed. It should have a place of not honor, but display in your home, or else there's no reason to keep it. So take a picture of them, you know, make a collage, put it up on a wall in the spare bedroom and call it a day.
Yeah, I agree.
Christine, would you want to, though, read love letters that you received in high school? I think it would be hilarious.
I think it would be hilarious.
Yeah.
I do think it would be, and I used to have them. They were thrown away when I was 30 by someone else. I didn't throw them away,
up.
But I used to have notes from the boys
ass.
In school. What? And girlfriends too, like my friends and the stuff that we would write to each other about the you know, stuff that was going to go down at lunch. You
yeah,
know
exactly.
I mean? It was like
can
a
you
lot.
Believe that?
Wow.
I didn't save any of that. I wasn't very sentimental as a young person. Not that I'm super sentimental now, but certainly more now. But I just didn't save any of that stuff.
I wouldn't have been interested. I mean, I'd be interested, not nostalgic in an attached way to that.
Right.
Like,
but it would be
holding
interesting
on
to see
like
how
a love,
you were
but
seen.
Just how I was. And then, boy, you're obsessed with how people see you.
I
My
am.
God,
sorry.
We're gonna dig
I,
into.
I tell
this.
You that I'm stoic, but maybe I'm not so stoic.
<I don't know. laughs>
Maybe that's just a front because I want to be seen as stoic. Like, I care so much that people think I'm stoic.
No, but so I wouldn't look at it so much on the way that it reflected me as much as what it would, like, what was the society like then? I would look at those old as more sociological.
Right.
But, you know, close by love letters, anything that happened after I was an adult, no. Unless it was some, you know, like in the case of someone who died. But like if you're breaking up with someone and holding on to love letters, girl, you're not over him. Yeah, we got to work on getting you over
you
him.
Do full clip.
Well, I mean, you can taper it. The clip can come it slowly, but it like, you know, you can still remember things for a while, but then you gotta cut it out.
I agree with Mark in that sense that he's saying keep the sentimental things and don't keep the mundane, although, you know, you got to keep them for a little while because if you want to refinance your mortgage or something, you need
keep them for
proof,
7 years. Yeah. That's it.
But focus more on the things that bring you joy or could, you know, make you smile sometime rather than spend most of your space in your house and the place that you love that should bring you joy, keeping things that don't, that aren't joyful for you, that aren't going to bring great memories, that are just going to take.
Okay, so the final thing that I want to discuss is the whole point of the song, which is wear sunscreen. Do we say yes? Do we say
wear sunscreen?
Absolutely. Oh my God.
Or you could be like me and just be so impatient and fidgety, you just can't sit in the sun and tan for very long and you just get up and move
around. But during that time, wear sunscreen. Yeah, I wish I had.
You do not wear enough sunscreen. I'll tell you that.
No, I know.
Right now.
I still don't.
Because you rely on your ethnic background to protect you.
I get brown easily.
Yes, you do.
I don't wear enough either. And Lord knows we spent our youth in baby oil and Bain de Soleil.
Wear sunscreen.
Remember those shiny mats you could get?
It's like, let's just increase the radiation by any means possible.
Yeah. Well, we didn't know.
Here comes
What's
Mark
the
with
most
idea.
Interesting thing you learned about somebody else here on the podcast?
Oh, okay. What's
Did you not learn something from everybody?
I did learn something from Andrea.
All right, well then, what is it?
I'm surprised to learn that she went back to school later, like I did.
Yeah, I know. So you guys have that in common.
We have that in common. So that was interesting to have in common. I love to learn things like that about people.
Yeah.
I use them against them in my online battles.
Absolutely. She's gonna expose you. She's like, oh yeah? Andrea didn't even go to college until she was 30. Because she failed the SAT 12 times.
I'm going to be like, did anybody see Christina's ankles?
Yeah. Have you seen those ankles? They are minuscule. How do they even hold up a human?
They're the tiniest
they're the smallest ankles of all time.
All time. Okay. No, Andrea, seriously, what do you have one that you learned about Mark?
All I can remember, because you know how I am when you put me on the spot, are your ankles and Mark's earlobes.
Yeah.
Which is literally the
we're both physical freaks at different ends of our body. Christina down south, a little problematic. Mark at the North Pole, also a problem. Not that down south. Not Tierra del Fuego.
I mean
Antarctica.
Oh my God. What was your thing that you learned about Andrea or I?
Well, I didn't know the ankle thing. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah.
But I had no idea that Andrea had a fro, and I am super cool with that. I think that is awesome. And I think you should really just kind of go all in and go total super fly with that and maybe get some 70s disco clothes. Christina and I did that one night. Christina and I did disco night.
You did? Oh, that would be so fun.
During COVID, we were so bored. She's like, okay, we're going to do a theme night and we're going to do disco night. And we both dressed up in disco outfits.
The cheese dip.
Fondue.
Fondue. We had fondue. Yeah.
And we danced to disco music here in my living room.
It's true. It was awesome. We were dressed up in disco clothes.
Yeah.
And I had a funny, like I had a big wig.
You had a big wig. You
I had a big
fro
wig. On. Yeah,
afro wig.
I had
or
my,
afro,
my blonde
but, you know.
Afro wig. That's awesome. Okay, so now, Andrea, what we're going to need from you for this episode is a picture of you with your fro, and that will be...
Yeah, we're going to celebrate that like you've never seen
before.
That is
what Mark will post as the teaser on Twitter.
Yeah. And I'll post a picture of my earlobes.
my ankle.
I'll zoom in on it and then superimpose like some brontosaurus steaks over me.
All you have to do is put a toothpick with a blonde cotton ball on top of it. And there you go. That was me in 1976 through 79.
Oh, my God.
Awesome. So, see, had a fro for the bicentennial. That's nice.
All right. Well, Andrea, it is always such a pleasure to have you on with us. We thank you so much for your time. Hope you had fun.
Thank you. Of course. Always.
And we're going to have you come back for
Feminist Halloween.
And we're going to dig into some of the misogynistic stuff that goes on. Oh,
It's the worst holiday. It really is awful.
It's the anonymity. You put a costume on someone, they act a fool.
They do.
All right. Well, Mark, you want to tell everyone about our social media?
Yeah. It's really awesome. I mean, it's so fun. Oh, you wanted me to give it what it was. Yeah. Okay. So... we are primarily active on Twitter. Christina is at Christina Gen X. I am at Mark Eats Peach. We have a podcast Twitter at Extemporaneous 2. We also have a Facebook group, Gen Extemporaneous. And we have a Patreon. Mm-hmm. If you just can't get enough of us and you are willing to give up one latte a month, you can join our Patreon at the level of Friend of Mozart, and it's $5 a month. You get a minimum of 3 extra episodes a month, and we work super hard on it, so come on, you guys, come listen to it. And that is at www.patreon.com/GenXtemporaneous.
All right, well, again, Andrea, thank you for joining us. We're going to say bye.
Bye.
Peace out, Cub Scouts.